You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Thursday, July 5th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speeds the Spitting Statistician. I am honored, as always, every day to have as my co-host, FSWA Hall of Famer, the King, Scott Angle. Scotty, did you eat 74 hot dogs? And I don't care if it was over 10 minutes over the course of the entire Independence Day. How many hot dogs did you eat, or how many pounds of meat did you eat yesterday, Scotty? How was your fourth?
I don't think I ate a single hot dog. And in terms of eating pounds of meat, let's see what I ate yesterday. I had a bacon omelet.
Okay.
And I had pizza for dinner. So I'm not a hot dog eating contest kind of guy. Went to the movies yesterday, had a nice time, and that was it.
Little Jurassic World, you were saying, right?
Yeah, I went to see Jurassic World, and it was entertaining for 2 hours, but it wasn't memorable. I think after five movies, right, at least for me personally, I think they've carried the dinosaur thing as far as they can. Maybe it's the pick of movies that I'm going to, but I just feel like with Hollywood recently, just like they're dragging out franchises too long, or they're coming up with unoriginal ideas. You know, right, it's very refreshing to see an original idea in a good movie lately. It's just, you know, maybe I'm not getting enough good recommendations. I don't know.
Fair enough. I know we could always ask our guy Chris Bavona, the manimal down there in the fantasy pit of misery. Dilly dilly to him. I know he's a big time movie buff. But listen, if you guys want to start giving us movie recommendations or talking fantasy football, whatever the case may be, you could always holler at us at 844-843-6879. We're here to get you ready for fantasy football to win your leagues and win that cash. We also, Scotty, we did in fact crown a new face of baseball, and it was kind of a blowout. I thought this was going to be much closer, but it was a blowout in the finals. The Roto Experts in the Mornings listeners have crowned Mike Trout as the face of baseball. He took Jose Altuve and boat raced him behind the woodshed over the holidays, Scotty, winning this poll pretty much like 85 to 15. Mike Trout as the face of baseball. Listen, I think that makes sense as he's in a year where, I mean, he may have the greatest war of all time, even over a Babe Ruth season. And, I mean, I think people do know Mike Trout, even on both coasts. They know the name. They know him as the best player in baseball. He's still a young guy. He may not be out there in the PR as much as guys like Harper or others that we talked about. But I think even the layman knows Mike Trout, and I think they got it right ultimately.
Yeah, I think it was going to be closer than it actually turned out to be, but Trout is clearly the best player in the game. The way Bryce Harper's playing right now, he doesn't have a chance.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So now that we have crowned the face of baseball, it is easier for us, you know, to move on to football. Listen, we've passed the holidays. We're going to have, like, the All-Star game coming up in baseball in a couple of weeks. We'll still give you bumps and bruises. We'll still give you kind of big-time takeaways. We are talking with Mike Leone a little bit later on in the show. We'll talk baseball and football. But, Scott, as we move to football, there was only a couple of things that I want to bounce off you over the last couple of days that happened. Remember how, I guess it was on our Tuesday show, I was telling you that, Aaron Jones of the Green Bay Packers was bulking up so he could have more dirt durability, so he could be better in pass protection. Well, I don't care how much he bulks up, it won't matter for the first two games of the season. It looks like Aaron Jones has been suspended for the first two games of the season. This, though, I do want to make it clear, this is not a performance-enhancing drug issue. This is a kind of the other drugs, shall we say. This is a substance abuse policy issue. He's going to miss the first two games. Scotty, I think this is interesting because we had something of a committee, and I use that word carefully because I do think it is a committee of three, not a timeshare of two, Scotty, when you had Aaron Jones there, you had Jamal Williams, and you also have Ty Montgomery there as well as maybe the PPR, the pass-catching kind of back. With Aaron Jones gone for the first two games, I think this really gives Scotty Jamal Williams a chance to, you know, kind of grab this job, and though it will still probably be some form of committee, I do think he can make the scales kind of tip in his favor in terms of his workload. What do you think this news means for a guy like Jamal Williams, Scott?
I think you already gave the analysis along with the information. It gives Jamal Williams a leg up, and could become more of a timeshare between him and Ty Montgomery here, because they do like Montgomery as an inside runner, but I think the problem with Montgomery, when I've watched him in the past, is he's not fundamentally a true running back, and he runs very high, and he exposes himself to a lot of big hits. So this is just more reason for me to now, more clearly now, to adjust my ranks on rotoexperts.com and the exclusive Edge package, enter the King at checkout for a special discount, and clearly make Jamal Williams that lead guy. But you always have to remember to temper your expectations with these running backs. A lot of the good games that they had when Aaron Rodgers was out, and historically, right, over Aaron Rodgers' career, when he's healthy, the running game is secondary, and that frustrated a lot of Eddie Lacy owners, after he had that good first year.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking about this, that the Packers haven't had a real hoss at running back since the back in the days of, Dorsey Levens and Amon Green and Edgar Bennett, things like that. But I agree with you, Scott. People have to remember Aaron Rodgers missed a lot of last season, okay? And the team definitely is much different with him under center or in shotgun. The idea that this is a passing team with the former league MVP at quarterback. Scotty, one other thing that I saw that I thought was interesting, LaDainian Tomlinson does a lot of work now for the NFL Network and other places, and he said that he has been in contact with his former teammate Antonio Gates, and he said that Antonio Gates is in fact considering a return to the Los Angeles Chargers. He said if he were to come back, it would obviously only be for the Chargers, and I think this is really interesting too. Not to get too much into the analysis, Scott, I know you are the king, but we have talked about, who to target. Maybe after the Hunter Henry injury, I know our guy, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, likes Mike Williams. I believe that Phillip Rivers is one of these quarterbacks that we've talked about, Scotty, where like he will just go where the matchup dictates instead of trying to force feed it to someone. But Antonio Gates was that dude that on third downs and on in goal line, green zone, as you call it, looks, he would find Antonio Gates. I looked, and Scott, Antonio Gates played 47% of the Chargers snaps last year. So, A, do you think this is actually going to happen, Gates to return to the Chargers? And if so, do you think he'll have any kind of impact in his, he was walking away from the game already. What do you think about this news with Gates and the Chargers?
I think, there is a realistic shot for it to happen, but at 38 years old, coming off of 30 receptions and 3 touchdowns, it's hard to rank him as a top 15 tight end if he does come back.
Right. The only thing is, though, last year, he was there with Hunter Henry. He, so you say his 30 catches or what have you, without Hunter Henry there, do you think there would be an opportunity if he did come back to him for him to actually, because he wouldn't be in a, I know it's not a real term, but the tight end timeshare, he wouldn't be in that with Henry. Do you think he would have any kind of more potential, or is he not really moving the needle for fantasy?
The reason why he wasn't a timeshare is because his skills were declining. He's no longer capable of being that lead guy like he was the year before and kind of holding off Henry. With the emergence of Henry was coming because he also saw the decline of Gates at the same time. So just because Henry's out of the picture, I don't know that at 38 years old with 15 seasons and, only 316 yards total last year, and to 10.5 yards per catch, were a little bit better than the season before, but still well off his career mark of 12.4. I don't know how much you can expect from a 38-year-old Antonio Gates. Right. There's other options in the passing game here. Maybe he'll still look for him in the red zoning. If he plays a full season, he can catch 5 touchdown passes, but I wouldn't expect too much in the way of yardage and receptions, even if he's still a lead guy.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. Listen, when it comes down to it, in the position where you would be considering something like this in your draft, we have given a number of tight ends that I think are more, you know, younger and on the ascension and could take a step forward instead of regressing and taking a step back. As you mentioned, Antonio Gates is entering his age 38 season. If he, in fact, were to come back, I would much rather, Scott, take a chance on a guy like Ricky Seals-Jones, on a guy like Trey Burton, even on a guy like George Kittle, you know, instead of, you know, going back to the well of the name recognition that is Antonio Gates. All right, there is going to be a lot of tight ends in there. Almost on some level, Scott, would you think this sounds right? On some level, similar to quarterback. With tight end, you know, when you get into that group of, say, tight end, oh, I don't know, 8 to 14, you know, there is that kind of big mishmash that a lot of people have different kind of tight ends that they like in that range, and you could pick one if you didn't want to spend up for the elite talent. You know, you can wind up letting the draft come to you and picking one of those guys that you like, that you have your eyes on to try to pop off this year. And I think you could do that at tight end, similar to how you could do that at quarterback, right, Scott?
Yeah, you know, we had our mock for FNTSY the other day, and you know, you can check that out on the FNTSY YouTube channel. And I got Ricky Seals-Jones in the 14th round, which was kind of a shock to me. And to me, you know, the guy is going to be a top 10 tight end. I think that, you know, they're going to look for him a lot in the red zone, whoever the quarterback is, because Larry Fitzgerald is just not a red zone sort of guy. He will score occasionally in the red zone, but I think he'll probably be their best red zone target. So then, you know, if you go to my ranks inside the exclusive edge package on rotoexperts.com, enter the king at checkout for a special discount, then you're looking at, you know, in my 8 to 14 range, you know, there are guys like George Kittle, O.J. Howard, even Austin Seferian Jenkins right outside that cusp, who has some sleeper potential, I believe. Mm-hmm. You can grab a lot of those guys middle to later on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to be, listen, at more than almost any other year that I've seen in a while, the top of my draft will definitely be, you know, wide receivers and running backs. I think I can wait on tight end. You mentioned some of these guys, you know. You mentioned some of these guys, the O.J. Howards, the Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm high on Trey Burton. I'm high on George Kittle, you know, that sort of guy. And then at the quarterback situation, you know, we talked about it also in this draft, Scott. People are waiting on quarterback. I remember something like Big Ben wasn't even drafted in that draft, right? You know, and there's the people, in my opinion, you know, the level that's around Phillip Rivers, Matthew Stafford, Patty Mahomes, Andrew Luck. You know, Scotty, I didn't get your thoughts on it. I asked Jake his thoughts on it. And in that FNTSY draft, what do you think about what Frank Stanfill did at the quarterback position? It looks like he waited a lot. And then because he was at the turn, he went back-to-back and picked up Andrew Luck and Patty Mahomes, okay? Both guys that, yes, I understand that there are questions around them, but, you know, they do both have that word upside, right? You know, if Andrew Luck comes back to form, he was a top five quarterback. If Patty Mahomes fulfills expectations that everyone believes, you know, I'm seeing more and more people compare him to a young Brett Favre, for God's sakes. You know, I don't think he's going to go like that right away, but he went and got two guys that have big time upside that he was able to wait on. You know, what do you think about what Frank Stanfill did? I think it was rounds like 11 and 12, maybe, and he went back to back Andrew Luck and Patty Mahomes.
You're gonna conjure up the Jake Seeley in me now. I thought I answered this our last show.
Oh, did we? I don't know. I thought I talked about this with Jake. I thought I talked about
you
this
did
with
talk
Jake.
About it with me, but you know, don't mind you bringing it up again. It's just I want to take a poke at Jake there.
Hey, no problem. I got a holiday in between. We forget. You know, I talk to you. I talk to Jake. I talk on Fantasy Freestyle. It all blurs into one, you know. But what do you think?
I already answered this, but I guess I'll have to do it again. You know, when Jake gets all curmudgeonly, like, you know, when he doesn't like a question that you ask.
It's true. We love the all-in gym,
love him,
but it's true.
Much as I love him, but it's true. the thing with Pat Mahomes, the comparisons, you have to remember that, you know, before we say that, okay, he's not going to be like that right away, the reason why Brett Favre was Brett Favre is I was watching the guy the first year starting, and he just looked so savvy, you know, making audibles at the line of scrimmage and basically picking his spots while also being a gunslinger. And if Pat Mahomes is drawing comparisons to Brett Favre, you can't say it's just for style. It also has to be, you have to look at the sources where it's coming from. And if it's coming from scouts, it's because they believe that he's going to make a quick ascension this year. So this could be a breakthrough year. Look, we've seen quarterbacks make an impact. I'm starting to believe that if quarterbacks don't make an impact quickly, that they're never going to, because, you know, there's one school that says, you know, let him start it right away. And there's another that said, let him sit and learn. But the guys who don't seem to get it right away never really seem to pan out. It's, you know, we're looking at Jameis Winston now. What are we going into the fourth year now? It still hasn't happened. Marcus Mariota's still evolving. You know, maybe you could look at him and say he's still evolving. But
I think the jury's still out on Mariota.
Yeah, the jury's still out on Mariota. He's sort of trending in the right direction, but you wonder if he'll ever be like above average, both real and fantasy wise. And guys who like immediately made an impact, like Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, etc. You know, they've made immediate impacts, and that's been it.
Think about Carson Wentz last year as well.
Yeah, how quickly it just turned on for him. The other part is Colin Kaepernick, though. It's just like, once the league figured him out, he took a tremendous drop-off.
This is true. You know, people like RG3 at the same time. I don't know if that was the quarterback or if that was, like, the scheme that they were running. But
I think it was the injury. He had that spectacular first year, and then he injured himself in the playoff games, and they tried to rein him back into who he wasn't, and I think that ruined his career.
You talking about Cap or Griffin?
RG3.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That first year, remember, he did have that gruesome knee injury, and then they tried to rush him back. Remember, and I have mentioned this all the time, when I talk about, how sometimes football players are getting paid more from their sponsors than they are from their real teams. I remember when Odell Beckham signed like his Nike deal, getting like $25 million a year. I was like, who should he actually be beholden to? The New York Football Giants or Nike or whatever? And I remember with RG3, when he got that injury, I think it was against – am I correct, Scott? It was against your Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs?
Yeah, in the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, right? Then there was a huge, I don't know if you remember, Scott, there was a huge Adidas campaign, right, where showing his, like, rehab and stuff, and it was, like, all in for week one. You know, that was literally the Adidas ad slogan, that he was all in for week one. And as we later saw, he was not ready yet, you know? He was not ready to come back. And I do believe that that pressure kind of, hurt Griffin III.
It was that plus the fact that they tried to make him into more of a pocket,
passer
when he came back, and that just wasn't who he was. You stopped asking him to be who he was.
Exactly. You know, you needed – what he did have was that explosiveness. I remember because I was literally – Scott, I was on the sideline when it happened, when he had a 65-70-yard run down the left sideline against the Minnesota Vikings for a touchdown, and you were like, wow, this is going to be dynamic. There were people on the Giants, like, at the time it was like JPP being like, I do not want to see this guy twice a year. So, you know, what they need to do – and then you see on the flip side a guy like yours – you know, like your guy, Scotty, Russell Wilson, how he does run, how he does have that mobility, but he does it in something of a more safe way. He does go out of bounds, maybe from his baseball experience. He does know how to slide, you know. And the question is, for me, you know, the question is, where on that continuum will Lamar Jackson wind up? Where on that continuum will Deshaun Watson wind up? Where on that continuum might a guy like Patty, that's Mahomes, wind up? Because they do believe he has some ability with his legs as well. Scotty, I'm intrigued. I'm glad, let's say, that we moved towards some of these running quarterbacks, and I brought up Russell Wilson. I got to tell you something, Scott. For another show that I'm doing, I was starting to preview the NFC West, and I was starting to preview the Seattle Seahawks. And I got to tell you something. When I dove into it a little bit more, I am much higher on the Seahawks than I was last week. You know, I saw this whole, you know, if you're hearing the narrative, right? I think you're hearing two narratives in the NFC West, Scott. I think you're hearing the narrative that, like, the San Francisco 49ers are obviously ascending, and Jimmy Garoppolo is going to, you know, take this team to the promised land or the valley beyond, if you are a Westworld fan, right? And the other narrative you hear in this division is that the Seattle Seahawks are like dead and buried. You know, you hear about the rest in peace to the Legion of Boom and all this stuff. They've also lost guys like Bennett, you know, things of that nature. But I got to tell you, I looked at both teams' schedules. I looked at their talent. And I think these Seahawks are going to be a little bit better than people think, Scotty. You know, they finished the season really strong with something like 4 of their last 5 at home. And then I also looked at the odds for MVP. Scotty, and Russell Wilson is going off as like the 4th or 5th choice at like 12-1. I think that could be a really good value for the MVP award. I think there's a universe where Russell Wilson puts this team on his back to playoff contention, whether they fall just short or, you know, whether they wind up 9-7 or whether they wind up 10-6 and maybe grab a wild card spot. They are going to go as far as Russell Wilson takes them. And I think that he is primed position. I think it could be a good value, Russell Wilson at 12-1 for NFL MVP. What do you think, Scotty?
I think it's fair to say that this team is, you know, some people are overstating it as it being a rebuild, where if it's right. More of like a reworking or a retool.
Mm-hmm.
I think the championship window is certainly closed. You know, I don't consider them a Super Bowl contender anymore. I'm not looking for a deep playoff run, but it can still be a wild card team.
Right.
And I don't think if the Seahawks are going to make the playoffs that they want Russell Wilson carrying him on his back. They want him to be part of the story there, because you look at the last few seasons, and especially last year, and carrying him on the back is not something you want to do. They want to, I keep saying it, they want to have more balance with the run game. Emory Hunt and I were talking about this the other day, and he thinks they can still win the division because they have the most experienced and clutch players at key positions, guys like Wagner and Thomas and Wilson, etc.
Sure.
He thinks that they have those type of players who
KJ
know
Wright.
How to win more than the Rams. And, you know, I think there's something to be said about that, but I don't think they're a better team than the Rams, period. He says, well, the Rams are better on paper. And I said, well, no, I think they're better on the field, too. You know, they really came into Seattle and kind of took the mantle from the division from them last year when they steamrolled them in their own house. The Seahawks did have some injuries, and I'm getting long-winded, but, you know, it's you know, that even when they're healthy, I don't think they're quite as good as the Rams are, you know, face-to-face.
Yeah.
The Rams are just better on both sides of the ball. That said, you know, this team, when you still have key players like Wilson and Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright and Earl Thomas and Frank Clark is still going to be a big force on the defensive line, that this team is not, you know, going to be a 5-6 win team, I don't think.
Yeah.
And, you know, this has evolved more from a balanced team into Russell Wilson's team, but you don't want Russell Wilson having to put up the kind of numbers that he had to put up last year. I think you're going to see some aggression fantasy-wise. They're going to lean a lot on Rashad Penny and the running game more. I think that's what they want to go back and do. So, you know, in terms of the NFL perspective, I could see them being in the wild card game. From the fantasy perspective, I think you're going to see a slight decrease in the production from Wilson and Baldwin, and Rashad Penny is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, Rashad Penny is going to be the linchpin, right, for that team. Like, they certainly expect
not a linchpin, but a much bigger piece.
Fair enough. They certainly spent the draft capital. They knew they needed to address that running back situation. They do so, but don't get it twisted. Carson should be in the mix as well. The other part of that, though, I agree with you, Scotty. I think the Rams are the class of that division. I think the Rams will win the division. I do think, though, remember, I said the narrative is up against, like, the San Francisco 49ers, who's everybody's darling, you know, and everybody thinks is automatically going to kind of leapfrog the Seattle Seahawks, and I would pump the brakes on that one a little bit. As it came to the Rams, when I was doing my research, I saw, Scotty, and I know you don't look at the schedule as much as I do, but one of the things that I've been continuing to beat the drum about...
It depends. Are you looking at the schedule being based on
what you project ahead?
Or do you look at it based on last year? If you're looking at projecting as how you think the teams are going to perform this year, not based on last year, I don't have a big problem with it.
Okay, good. So let's do that. And it wasn't even just about the projecting about the opponents, but you know, and I've said this to you before, Scotty, I know one thing that NFL coaches look at is the dreaded three-game road trip, okay? And the Rams, in fact, have one of those. They have the three-game road trip, and I think it's especially problematic if you are a team on the West Coast and you are traveling all the way around, and they do have three straight road games, weeks 5, 6, and 7. See, the Rams go on the road, Seattle and Denver and San Francisco, and then right around that three-game road trip, then when they come back, the team they welcome home, the Green Bay Packers. Then right after that, they go on the road to the Dome to see New Orleans, you know, right before their three-game road trip, the team they have home, the Minnesota Vikings, the team right before that, the Los Angeles Chargers. That is a stretch of like 6 or 7 games for the Rams that are not easy. They have a three-game, and that doesn't even count, you know, a December matchup with the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. This Rams schedule is no joke. Remember, as the first-place team last year, you see all the other first-place teams. So they're going to see Minnesota. They're going to see Philly. They're going to see New Orleans. And I think that is a problem for, like you said, Scott, a team that kind of arrived last year, maybe not with the veteran presence of the Seahawks that are still kind of quote-unquote learning how to win. I would pump the brakes on everybody's predictions on the NFC West. That's all I'm saying about that. Scotty, when we come back.
I will retort to that when we come back.
You can retort to that. And we also, I believe, we're going to have Mike Leone. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball as well. We'll get some injuries. Scotty, my guy, Glaber, hit the DL. You know I don't feel good about that. We'll talk about that and some other stuff when we come back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning. The King, Scott Engel, and the spitting statistician, Dane Martinez. We put the fun in functional sports radio. Happy America. Come on right back. Roto Experts in the Morning.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King, Scott Engel. Scotty, before the break, we were talking about the NFC West, some of the scheduling, you know, kind of the Rams as a first-place team, they get a first-place schedule, and we were talking about not to, you know, put too much dirt on the grave of the Seattle Seahawks just yet. What were you about to say?
Well, the Rams do have a challenge, you know, a lot of tough teams on their schedule. You talk about that three-game road swing, though. It's on the West Coast against teams that they could all beat, Seattle, Denver, and San Francisco. But look, you know, if the Rams win the division, you know, it'll be earned this year.
Right.
And, you know, we can't assume, you say, tough schedule. You know, when the Rams appear on somebody else's schedule, they're tough too. So, you know, if they're going to be a good team, they're going to earn it this year.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And one of the points that I was making when I was prepping, like I said, for over on Fantasy Freestyle, where I was looking at the NFC West for next week, you know, that was exactly one of the points that I was going to make, Scott, is like, listen, this is a challenging schedule. I will say this, though. If the Rams get through it and do win the NFC West, let's say they do, I don't know, go, you know, 11-5, they do get a bye or whatever, I think that they will be battle-tested and ready to go for the NFC playoffs, you know, so that could be very interesting as well, yeah.
I think fantasy-wise, you have to remember some of these things, though. You know, when you're drafting, you know, when you look at teams like Minnesota and Denver on the schedule, you know, that's going to make some tough decisions. You know, Brandon Cooks, you know, moving back to the NFC here. He was a big disappointment last year.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with you. The Chargers on their schedule as well. I think they got a great pass rush and some great cornerbacks on the back end as well. Scotty, we're going to bring in our guy Mike Leone here from DailyRoto.com. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball, a little bit of football, like a two-sport athlete. I like Brian Jordan, Deion Sanders. You know, you're over here, Bo Jackson, but you like yourself a little Russell Wilson. He did play some minor league baseball. Hey, Mike, we're bringing you in now from DailyRoto.com. Who is your favorite two-sport athlete? Was it Brian Jordan, Bo Jackson, Deion? Who is your favorite two-sport athlete, Mike? How you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. It's got to be Bo Jackson. I have a Bo Jackson Raiders jersey, and I have a Bo Jackson Royal Blue Kansas City Royals jersey.
Really? Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of Bo Jackson here today, Leone. We're going to talk two sports a little bit. But first, I got to ask you, did you use Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl?
I mean, I think everybody did, even though it was kind of like cheating.
Yeah, it was cheating. It was cheating. I tried to...
Even Peter Griffin used him, yeah.
I tried to, because I knew he was kind of a cheat, and I also wanted to cheat, but not as obvious. So instead, I used to always ride with the Nigerian nightmare, Christian Okoye, in that game. He was a beast also.
The Bills were great, though. You know, being a Bills fan, they had the direct snap play to Thurman Thomas.
Right.
So they had a pretty good, you know, the limited Tecmo Super Bowl playbook.
Right.
That game was the best, though. So.
Yeah, with the Seahawks, I had Dave Craig to Steve Largent.
There you go. All right, Mike, so let me ask you this. As you know by now here, okay, I always like to ask you, not necessarily just like, who do you like on today's slate? I always say here for the fans of Roto Experts in the Morning, we are not just giving you a fish. We are trying to teach you how to fish. And so my first question for you is this. At this point of the season or a little bit later on, when we hit the dog days of summer, sometimes we start to see young pitchers specifically, right, start to come up against their innings cap, maybe start to go longer than they've ever gone before, maybe start to get tired. Is there any reason that you need to start looking at that and maybe stay away from some of these young pitchers who have flashed before earlier in the season?
I think what you need to do is just keep an eye on the recent performances.
Okay.
For us, what we do for starting pitchers, we care about the recent performances a lot more than hitters. And that's part of the reason why is, you know, that specific example you gave. But we always want to keep an eye on, you know, is the velocity dropping? Like if they're going up against a career high in innings and you're worried about fatigue, well, just check their recent peripherals. You know, are they still generating as many swing and strikes? So we like to look at swing and strike rate. We like to look at velocity. Those are two of the big statistics we like to look at as far as recent data, and the third would be hard hit percentage. So if you look at those three statistics, and you never want to go too overboard with the recent data, but it is something that if there's this additional context that you can layer in, which in the case you gave is a younger pitcher who's going up against a career high in innings and just might be, you know, starting to fatigue, that's really what you want to look at. If you don't see any issues in those statistics, then I really wouldn't worry about it. That's the nice thing about DFS is eventually you might have to worry about it, but we can take it one start at a time.
When you're looking at DailyRoto.com this morning for your picks for tonight, you mentioned Nico Goodrum at second base because he has a matchup against Jeremy Hellickson. Do you really feel like Goodrum's going to be a good play? Hellickson has, you know, been better than advertised, and you know how often do you recommend going with a punt like that?
Well, Goodrum, I believe Goodrum's going up against Gallardo today.
Texas. My mistake.
So I mean, often though, when you're looking at the punt, what you're just looking for is someone who's in a decent context, and especially on FanDuel at times, but on DraftKings too, it can be difficult to find a low-priced punt like Goodrum, who's going to have a top six lineup spot. We're projecting him to hit fifth, who's going to have the platoon edge. Obviously, he's a switch hitter, so he's always going to have the platoon edge, but he's going to face a pitcher like Giovanni Gallardo, who we have with a weighted on base average baselines of like 340 plus against both right-handed and left-handed batters, just because he's been so bad the last two seasons. He's had ERA, FIP, XFIP, all north of five. So Detroit doesn't generally see high implied run totals, but they got a sneaky good offensive park. It's hot everywhere across the country. That's going to help in Detroit as well. And as a result, we see an implied run total nearing five for them, which is pretty high. And the other thing on this slate, Scott, is you need to find some punts so that you can pay up for Justin Verlander. You know, the last few slates, we haven't suggested paying up for elite starting pitching, but you just look at the landscape of this slate and just the massive gap between Verlander and everyone else. We sort of want to do whatever we can to get him into our lineup, and a punt like Goodrum allows you to do that.
Yeah, we were talking about today's slate. You see Justin Verlander going today. After that, you know, you got to go down to maybe guys like Shelby Miller, Matt Boyd, or even maybe a Luke Weaver today. So absolutely, you're going to try to spend the money today on Justin Verlander. Mike, I also want to let you know, I remember telling you we're doing our face of baseball brackets, and we crowned our champion over the holiday. Mike Trout did, in fact, win. He was the four seed, but he dominated even Jose Altuve in the finals. So Mike Trout is the Roto Experts in the Morning face of baseball. But what I want to ask you about is his teammate, who just returned, Shohei Ohtani, who has returned as a hitter. You know, how do we think about him purely as a hitter now, even after missing a month, let's say? I know that, you know, his issues are with his arm, so he should be able to swing the bat and be the same kind of hitter he was. But with that time off, you know, he was trying to adjust to the league. How do we profile Ohtani's value purely as a hitter in DFS?
Yeah, it's difficult right now because, you generally don't see a hitter with that time off and then jumping right back into the fold, and you don't know if there's going to be rust there. But Ohtani, in the play appearances we have seen, 138 this year, he's been, you know, better than advertised, I think. You know, it's right out at the gate. He's put up a 378 weighted on base average, 238 ISO. When you look at what he's doing, he's generating a ton of hard contact. So that's really good. He's someone that, you know, left on left matchups, I think it's a pretty easy pass right now until we see a bit more out of him. But if he's going to face some weak right-handed pitching, I still think he's interested in tournaments. The issue is, you know, they're working him back slowly. He's hitting sixth in the lineup behind Andrelton and Simmons. And where his price tag is, a guy who's hitting sixth in those pitchers' parks out west, I think it's a good way for us to just take it easy and see how he's reacting coming back from the injury. He's not really in such an amazing context that we need to press it right now. And you know what? With Mike Trout, his teammate, you know, that's someone, too, that on big slates, you know, you hate to, you know, overreact to slumps and whatnot. But he had that injury for a little bit with DH, and he's finally back in the field. But we've got his 15-day hard hit rate from inside edge at like 4%, which is absurd for Trout. On the season, he's at 31%. So on slates like this, where you've got a lot of high-end outfielders, George Springer, although he's slumping a little bit, but you've got Bryce Harper, too, with Washington and a high implied run total, I think that's when you can, you know, you don't have to press a guy like Mike Trout when he's struggling. When we want to press guys that are struggling, it's just because there's a massive gap between them and everyone else at a position, and then we just trust the math. But if it's really close, you can use things like that as tiebreakers and take a more conservative approach.
Mike, you guys are talking about Shelby Miller going against the Padres. The matchup is obviously good against that San Diego team, but Miller hasn't shown us anything since he's come back this season so far.
Yeah, it's a scary matchup. There's no doubt about it. I noted in our podcast and our analysis for today that, you know, the concern is that we just don't know where to set a skill set baseline. Like, it's only two starts, so it's tough to completely scrap what, you know, projection systems have for him. You look like the Zips and Steamer expectations for him, they're not too bad. But obviously the last time he pitched, 100 innings was in 2016, and he had a 6-plus ERA for Arizona in his first year there. And the concern is he's just washed, for lack of a better term. The hard part is, and when I said, and this kind of goes back to my point I was making about Trout, where when he's cold and there's some uncertainty, if there's a lot of competition, that's, even if he's the top guy, if there's a lot of competition, that's a really easy, you know, out to pivot off of him. But you start looking at the starting pitchers on this slate, and with Shelby Miller priced so cheaply in such a good matchup, and then you look at the alternatives, there's no one that breathes a whole ton of confidence anyway. So it's one of the situations where, you know, maybe our projection's too high on Miller, but you look at the alternatives, and it's like at that point, you know, it still seems like a good play. And that's when we don't mind taking chances on guys, even though there's uncertainty around them. You look at our next in line values, you know, Luke Weaver's overpriced for how he's been performing. You got someone like Max Fried for Atlanta, who is in a really risky situation with an implied run total against 4.7, even though we saw him flash some big-time strikeout potential in his last start. Marco Gonzalez has to go up against a really righty-heavy Angels lineup. There's just not a lot there, Scott. So I don't mind rolling the dice on Shelby, even though I agree there's definitely some concern over where his true skill set is.
We're talking with Mike Leone over here at DailyRoto.com. And remember, starting very soon with DailyRoto.com, we're also going to be doing the DKMS Trivia Challenge to help people potentially win tickets for two to the 2018 World Series. Go on over to DailyRoto.com/DKMS, and you can learn a lot more. We make millionaires over there at Daily Roto. Mike, I got to tell you something. I'm gaining on Jake in Roto Clio.
Eric Thames last week.
Yeah, that's right. I am now only 5 points behind him. And here's the thing, Mike. As you know, Jake can sometimes be like, that's a little too chalky for me. You know what I mean? So I need your help. I need your help today because you were saying that, listen, Verlander is the clear class, right? So part of me is like, oh, I want to go Verlander, but then I'm going to have to hear it from Jake. And so I hear how you're talking about Shelby Miller, right, as a potential. I was looking at Matt Boyd as a potential kind of non-chalky kind of guy. So I'm thinking about Miller or Boyd. And then offensively, I really loved the idea of Paul Goldschmidt tonight, and I know you guys were saying that as well, how he's facing a lefty, he's got great ISO against the lefties, and Eric Lauer is not really doing it, but I'm worried that he's going to tell me that that's too chalky as well, right? So then I'm looking at another first baseman, and I'm intrigued by the idea of attacking Shelby Miller with Eric Hosmer. Which way do you think I should go? Because I feel like what I'm going to do is I'm going to bear the brunt of Jake's hate one way or the other. So should I go with Verlander and then like Hosmer, or should I go with someone like Shelby Miller, Matt Boyd, and then pick Goldschmidt today for Roto Clio? What do you think, Mike?
I think you want to get the chalk guy you want to use is Verlander.
I need to get Verlander in there, right?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I'm on board with the Hosmer play. I think if you're going a little under the radar, you could go with some Mariners. If you're looking just for dongs, Jaime Barrios, someone we have, is extremely homer prone. His ground ball rates in the minors the previous two seasons have been around like 30%, which is, that's absurdly low for the majors. And it's been a little bit higher this far in the majors, but in the minors it's been really low. So we're projecting him to be really, really homer prone. And I know Seattle's implied run total on this slate's in the low four, so there's nothing that sticks out. So I think that counts as contrarian if you go with a bat there, whether it's Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, Haniger, whoever you want to go there.
Healy's hot too. Maybe I'll get Ryan Healy. Interesting. Where are you going for a home run today, though, Leone?
I mean, if you removed the chalk qualifier and I could take whoever I wanted.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd probably go with Bryce Harper, who's been swinging it really well, going up against, an experienced right-handed pitcher. So that's probably where I'd go. If you want more of an under the radar, well, I gave you my under the radar pick.
You guys have Evan Gattis listed as catcher tonight, and whenever you have Gattis in there, it's obviously for the pop.
Yeah, and Houston's in a good spot against Carlos Rodon, who, in his start this year, he has not seen that K rate and that ground ball rate that he's seen previously. So, and we're up to five starts now, not like a huge sample, but it is still somewhat concerning, and you're going up against a ton of right-handed batters for Houston. But you did point out Matt Boyd, Dane, and I did want to note, I don't like the price too much on him for cash games, but on this slate with so many bad pitching options, he was someone that I was really looking at in tournaments. He has a surprisingly low expected weighted on base average. It's in the low 300s. And in his recent starts in particular, he's been a lot better in terms of K rate. His K rate over his last five starts has been at like 23% or higher in five starts in a row. Season mark's only at 21%. So someone who's kind of on the upswing in terms of K rate, and the batted ball data has been pretty good on the season. So I do like that for tournaments.
Scotty, got one more for Mike?
Oh, okay. When you look at the stacks for tonight, you really only have the Nationals and the Astros in the top two. You do have Minnesota in the top five, though, and I thought that was an interesting pick.
Yeah, Andrew Cashner's got a 371 X WOBA, a 207 X ISO, currently has the lowest ground ball rate of his career, the second lowest K-minus walk percentage. And, you know, this Twins lineup, Scott, they're up top. You know, they've got a decent amount of depth in terms of power. They don't have, like, that one or two elite bats, like you could say with Arizona, where you've got Pollock and Goldschmidt. But in their split against right-handed pitching, we've got five of their hitters with an ISO baseline between 193 and 225. So really solid power through five guys in the lineup gives it a little bit more depth if it doesn't have that elite talent up top. And on this slate, too, unlike the previous few slates, we haven't seen crazy elite dominant teams up top. So it's not a bad slate to sneak out of that first tier where the chalk might be Washington and Houston and go into that second tier with someone like Minnesota.
Hey, Mike, I told you we'd do a little bit of Bo Jackson action, so I want to ask you a football question. You know, I'm very intrigued by, you know, as last week when we talked about the zero wide receiver theory, and I really believe that that's the way football is going in general. I like how you mentioned that, you know, kind of conceptually, how more and more teams are going with spread offenses, how more and more quarterbacks are looking for mismatches at the line and audibling at the line. And I was talking with Scott a little bit earlier in the show that I was looking at the Los Angeles Rams. Right. And I think the Los Angeles Rams are a perfect example of this kind of theory and what I call the fantasy herd in terms of the wide receiver position. It's almost like whack-a-mole. You never know which is going to be. So let me test this theory with you, Leone. If Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, and Cooper Kupp, you know, if they all play, say, 15, 16 games, right, barring injury, that would dramatically tilt the scales. Do you think it's possible that they could all wind up like within 10 targets of each other, within 5 or 10 catches of each other, within like 50, 60 yards of each other, within one or two touchdowns of each other, and you never will know? Like, all of them will have good weeks, but you're never really going to know which one it is. Like, am I right that, like, the ceiling of the best one, yeah, and the floor of the bottom one is really not that big of a gap?
I see it the way that you see it, and I do worry that Robert Woods could end up overdrafted just because he had a couple of just insane games last year, and right, his schedule for him is a lot tougher, you know, the cornerbacks that he's expected, sure, to line up against this year. So I'm with you. I definitely see it breaking out that way. Another situation that could end up somewhat similar is KC, where you've got, mm-hmm, Kelsey, you've got Sammy Watkins, yep, you've got Tyreek Hill. But I am really interested in Sammy Watkins this year. I think he could have like a hugely efficient season, even though that obviously he's not going to be a target hog.
And, you know, looking at the 49ers, and especially for DFF purposes, I note that, you know, everybody talks about the last five games, like momentum from last year doesn't push from one year to the next in the NFL. You don't go from January to September with momentum, and they had no pressure on them, and they have to take time to gel as well as a new unit, especially offensively. Do you think the 49ers are in danger of being DFS disappointments early in the schedule with their key players?
I actually like the 49ers. I get the angle that you're taking here with the fact that there wasn't much pressure on them. Teams hadn't seen them with Garoppolo before. But ultimately, I just see another offseason with him in the fold for them to work around that. And you've got pretty good, you know, price tags and drafts on a guy like Marquise Goodwin. And for DFS early in the season too, someone like George Kittle is really interesting, who's got some athleticism if you look at his like spark score and whatnot, who's going to be a really cheap DFS tight end out of the gate. I like that. So I'm actually on the more optimistic side with the Niners offense.
Fair enough. Hey, Mike from DailyRoto.com. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us. I think we're going to have you next week, and then you skip a week, right? You get some time. But we'll have you next Thursday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Do me a favor, refine that Tecmo Bowl game in the interim, okay?
I will. We should talk the draft $100,000 grand prize best ball championship next week. Maybe I'll prep for that.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear more about that, because the idea of the best ball format, obviously there's some very specific strategies, you know, that we want to get into. So maybe we will, in fact, highlight that next week. And I'm going to I got you down for Bryce Harper going yard today. All right, Mike?
All right. Sounds good, Dane. Thanks, Scott.
All right.
Have a good one. So there you have it, Scotty. Mike Leone representing DailyRoto.com. As I was saying, you can go on over to DailyRoto.com/DKMS and learn more about how you could help the fight against blood cancer. We've been working with them for a while. And Scott, we're getting close to this trivia challenge. Starting next week, we're going to be doing the DKMS trivia challenge. Leone with some interesting insights there. What'd you take away?
You know, very interested, you know, that he took the opposing view with the 49ers
right
there. You know, but the NFC West is going to be very interesting this year. You know, I think it's going to be a tough division. I think most people are assuming that Arizona is going to pull up the rear there because of the quarterback situation. And defensively, you know, Patrick Peterson's going to be in a different role, but I think
right.
they have to do that because they have more of a weak secondary this year. And I don't know how they good are at linebacker. I think on paper they probably have the most holes.
Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals, I expect to be one of, to be quite honest, I expect them to be picking in the top five of the NFL draft next year.
I don't know if they're going to be quite that bad.
I mean, you know, I think they are, like, if we look at the NFC, right? In the NFC North, I personally think in last place, we're talking about Detroit or Chicago. I think both of those teams are better than Arizona. In the NFC East, I look at, say, what is it? Maybe Washington, the Giants, Dallas. I think these teams are better than Arizona. In the South, I personally think it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I think they will be around the same level as Arizona. Who do you think is going to be dramatically worse than Arizona in the NFC, Scott?
Dramatically worse than Arizona in the NFC. Okay, so you rattled it off pretty quick there. You know, I'll have to go division by division. I don't think
right.
the NFC East is that good, to be honest with you.
All right. So who do you think finishes in the basement of the NFC East and compare them to Arizona? Washington?
I'm probably going to say Washington.
Okay.
And I think that they're probably going to end up being about equal with Arizona.
Okay. In the NFC North, I personally think maybe the Lions are in the basement. You think the Lions are better or the Cardinals are better?
Unless
you think the Bears maybe
improved,
right?
Detroit's going to be better than Arizona.
Okay, and then in the NFC. Okay, so then in the NFC South, I think we agree
Tampa
the Tampa Bay Bucks, right? And
yeah, I think Arizona will be better than Tampa Bay.
Okay, so even that, Scott, has Arizona as what, the second worst team in the AFC in the NFC, something like that.
Well, who knows if the 49ers are going to be much
yeah.
better than they are? You could be
this
talking
is true.
About 2-7-win teams there.
This is true, and that is why they play the games. Hey, Scotty, real quick, I know we don't have too much time. I mentioned that Gleyber Torres is going to the DL with a hip strain. Over the last couple of days, are there any other big-time bumps and bruises that we need to consider, except for the potential Rookie of the Year in the American League?
Also, Freddie Freeman should be able
oh, yeah,
to play today
game.
With the hand injury. Christian Yelich came back from 5 games missed yesterday with a back injury. He went 1-for-4. Garrett Richards returned for the DL. 8 strikeouts, 3 runs, 2 earns, 5 3/3 innings, had a win, but then Tyler Skaggs back on the DL with an abductor strain. Rich Hill leaving last night's game because of back spasms. Dylan Bundy will return to the rotation on Friday. Mike Moustakas was out. He's been day-to-day with a back problem. Ian Kennedy put on the DL with an oblique injury. He'll miss 1 start. Mitch Moreland has missed 2 consecutive games with a back injury. And Lewis Brinson and his 186 average going on the DL with a hip injury.
All right, Mitch Moreland missing time for the Red Sox. Could be an opportunity for Steve Pierce, newly acquired, to get some at-bats. Have a great rest of the day, Scotty. Tomorrow we'll talk about your QB ranks in the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. We'll also talk about some of the other articles in there, post-hype sleepers and the like. Have a great rest of the day. All right there, Scotty?
All right, you too, my man.
Sounds good. When we come back, Jake Seeley joins the fun. Roto Experts in the morning.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez, speaks the spitting statistician. They also call me the stable genius. They also call me the vocal minority. We put the fun in functional sports radio here at Roto Experts in the Morning every Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. Remember, if you want to join the party, the number to call is 844-843-6879. You could also catch us on Twitter. You could always find me on Twitter at Spittin' Speeds. You could always find the King at Scotty Roto X, our guy, the all-in kid. And, of course, Roto Experts. We do the polls. And also, if you want to, you know, chime on in, feel free. We always love spending a couple of minutes with our listeners. Remember that number also, 844-843-6879, because in a couple of days now, when we come back next week, we are going to start our DKMS Trivia Challenge. Waiting a couple minutes for our guy, the all-in kid. He's going to be joining us in a couple of minutes, but one of the things we are going to be doing today is breaking down the Kansas City Chiefs. If you remember, Jake and I have been going team by team. Our barnstorming tour is more than halfway done. We have been doing a little bit in the AFC West. We told you about the Oakland Raiders, how we think you need to take the under on them. They're over-under right now. It has even gone up. It started at 8.5. It opened at 8.5. It's gone up to 9. Okay, so right now the early action is actually taking these Raiders on the over. I'm telling you, Jake and I agree that we would take the under on the Oakland Raiders. The other team we've already previewed in the AFC West was the Denver Broncos, okay? Jake and I both think Royce Freeman is going to be the guy in that backfield, okay? Today, we will keep it moving and talk a little bit more about the Kansas City Chiefs in that division. But now, as we welcome in the all-in kid, Jakey, I do have some news and notes over the last couple of days to bounce off you before we dive into the Kansas City Chiefs. But first, I gotta ask, did you down 73 hot dogs or more yesterday? How was your fourth, brother man?
No, it was good, but no, of course not. 74, by the way, that the record.
It was 74. Yeah, you know, I was putting the line. I didn't think you wanted to break the record. The old record, I think, was 73, Joey Chestnut. I put on Twitter, though, the Golden State Warriors have engaged in contract talks with Joey Chestnut.
Oh, I'm sure. Doesn't surprise me. I don't know how you screwed that up, though. Did you watch it?
Did I watch it? No, I didn't watch it, but I saw that the record was 74. I purposely said 73 to you.
Not you. I'm saying watching it. They screwed up and the count at the time.
Oh, really? Like, no, I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah.
What happened? How did it go down?
When they were done, they said it was 64. They missed it by 10.
Oh, my goodness. Because, listen, I was over on mybookie.ag. You know, I woke up on a July 4th because, you know, my body clock wakes me up for 7 o'clock every morning. And I went on over to mybookie.ag. You could bet Joey Chestnut against the field. But then they also had a number of, like, over-unders for him and, like, one or two of the other top contenders. You could get him, like, over-under 73, over-under 68, you know, and pretty much every interval of 5 hot dogs. And I thought to myself, I was conflicted, Jake, because you know me. I'm a man that likes a little bit of action, you know, something to keep myself vested in the holidays. But I thought to myself, would this be crossing a line of being too much of a degenerate to actually bet on the Nathan's hot dog eating contest? What's your stance on that, Jake? You think maybe good place to get action because you know Chestnut was going to win? Or is it that just going a little bit too far over on mybookie.ag?
No, I mean, I would probably bet on Chestnut.
There's a Chestnut versus the field. He was going at like minus 400.
I probably would have done the over on 68 because ESPN Streak for the Cash had the over-under at 70.25.
Okay.
And I took the over. And that's how I knew because originally we all got it wrong. And then they're like, hold up. And then they had to redo it and fix it. And, of course, everybody got mad and everything like that. But, yeah.
Right. But all's well that ends well. Your streak continues. It's like they said La La Land at first, too. But ultimately, it is still moonlight one way or the other. I like that. Hey, Jake, let's go into football a little bit. Listen, over the last couple of days, as you know, whether it's June news or July news, it seems like, Jake, we're in the phase of the year, though, where like the NFL is just handing out suspensions. It seems like we're in the suspension week. You know, we already talked about the Julian Edelman ban being upheld. We talked about Jameis Winston. No need to really talk about Reuben Foster. But one that I thought was interesting, and to clarify, is not a performance-enhancing drug suspension, but is a substance abuse suspension. We talked about Aaron Jones and how he bulked up, you know, earlier in the week, talking about for durability, for pass protection. Well, I don't care how much he bulks up, Jay, because he's missing the first two games. Okay, he's going to have a two-game suspension, and I think this is very interesting because I think we've talked about this as, and I use this word carefully, as a committee with him and Jamal Williams and Ty Montgomery, but I think that Ty Montgomery slots into the pass catching kind of third down role. They don't want to, you know, have his body take too much of a bruising. And so if Aaron Jones misses the first two games, I think our guy Jamal Williams really has a chance to grab the brass ring here in this job. What do you think?
That's the biggest thing. I was actually talking about that Tuesday afternoon, because funny enough, I recorded the On Target podcast with Chris Harris, and we talked about the Packers backfield, and then of course, the fact is, I think this is more of like that is the opportunity and a worry for Aaron Jones, because I think you and I don't know who I've even talked to about it at this point, but it could be everybody.
It all meshes together.
But the fact was, I was I'm a Jamal Williams fan, but I was also taking Jamal Williams only because he was cheaper. That I've said, I don't know, again, to you or for many people, but I was taking whoever was cheaper between the two, because something that Chris and I talked about too is, like, when you get into these type of situations, we can only evaluate talent. Like, there's some situations where, you know, I've said it on this show for sure, is more often than not, talent wins out. It's not always, it's not 100%, it's more often than not, but sometimes we just don't know. We can sit back here and project as much as we want, but when it came to the Packers this year, nobody outside the coaching staff, and the coaching staff might not even know as of 3 days ago which way they were going, and they might, if the suspension didn't happen, they might have not known until week one. So we can't tell you, like, for sure it's going to be Jamal Williams 50%, Aaron Jones 35%, Ty Montgomery 15%. We can project and say the skills match up for this, but we don't know. So the issue was, Aaron Jones is more explosive. Jamal Williams is better all around. Definitively the better pass blocking running back. It's not even close. Like, Jamal Williams actually ranks near the top. Aaron Jones is one of the five worst. I mean, that's
there's a reason he was trying to put on weight to improve his pass protection. You know what I mean? There's a reason he was looking to grow in that area.
So to your point, the issue here is, now if Jamal Williams comes out and has 180 yards and a touchdown and looks great the first 2 weeks, and Ty Montgomery is the pass catcher, does Aaron Jones come back to a job or not? And he'll get some touches, but whereas right now the speculation might be he might even be the lead. Well, depends on how Williams does those first 2 weeks. It could be. If Jamal Williams bombs and averages 2.5 yards per carry, it might actually help Aaron Jones. So I think you're at the same boat. Jamal Williams' price is going to get driven up by about three rounds at least now. I was in a slow draft, and he went in the sixth while the guy was on the clock.
Oh, wow.
Because you could potentially get an RB2. So now I might get some old Jamal Lewis. I might start getting Aaron Jones now, because he's going to be going at a discount, and that scenario is a plausible one.
Absolutely, and it's interesting. I like the way you break it down, Jake. You talk about, like, so we agree, you know, what this does in fact mean is that Jamal Williams will get, like, he'll get the first bite at the apple. You know what I mean? The question is what he does with it. I was kind of the mindset that he would, in fact, succeed, kind of almost render Aaron Jones to be someone like a Samaje Perine, you know what I mean, who's definitively behind the early down guy in that team. But you raise a good point. If Jamal Williams winds up defecating the mattress with his opportunity, then they may go straight back to Aaron Jones. And I know one of the things we have said on this show before, Jake, is when we have these kind of situations, you're taking the guy that's expected to go lower because you think he's going to be something more of a value. But with this news, are we now saying that Jamal Williams is in the same kind of boat as other people we've mentioned before? Guys like Mike Williams out there with the Chargers, guys like Chris Hogan with New England, how now more people are just coming to the party where we're already dancing at?
Yeah, pretty much. But also, it's a little bit different with those situations, but it is definitely one of those ones where, you know, all that value is going to kind of go out the window. And whereas I'm still drafting Mike Williams and Chris Hogan because they're still not quite going where I think they should go. With Jamal Williams, now he's going to be going, you're just going to pay the price. You're going to pay the price that he's potentially their lead running back for the entire season and an RB3 for your team. As I said, if you're going in the sixth round, now you're paying full Jamal Williams price. And to be honest with you, I know you always like to look at the schedule.
The first two
games, granted they're both home, but it's Chicago and Minnesota. It's not exactly an easy road there of the first two games being run defenses.
This is true. Remember, you know how much I like that Minnesota defensive line, even with Sheldon Richardson now in the middle. And then to your point, Jake, to your point, let's play this out a little bit more, and I understand I'm pontificating here, right? Let's say you're right. Jamal Williams does not grab the brass ring right away. And to your point, maybe they decide to then go to Aaron Jones. What's interesting to me is then the next three games – are kind of easier run defenses to toil against, you know? When you think about Washington or Detroit in there as well, they don't scare me as much. So it could be like kind of stacked where Jamal Williams has a tough road to hoe, and then all of a sudden it opens up as Aaron Jones comes in, and it's kind of like, oh, he's the guy. So that could be interesting. You talk about where the value is when things are close like this. You always want to go to the guy who's going to be lower, and now it looks like Aaron Jones because of this news will probably be the lower guy.
Those next two games, Washington and Buffalo, were in the five worst last year in run defense.
That's what I'm saying, right? So it could, the deck could be stacked in Aaron Jones' favor, quite frankly, because Jamal Williams could not, like, look good in the first 2 weeks, and then Aaron Jones comes back and it's like, oh, we got to give this guy his turn. And then, you know, like you said, against Washington, Detroit, I think there was one other team, maybe Buffalo it was. Like,
no, Buffalo Buffalo and Washington were both in the bottom five. Detroit's right. middle level, and then San Francisco's in the bottom 10.
So it could look like Aaron Jones is a lot better than Jamal Williams, and then he could have that chance. Very, very interesting. Jake, one other thing that did catch my eye over the holiday, things like that, was not only, you know, not only the Joey Chestnut, not only the fireworks, but I saw LaDainian Tomlinson, who's doing a lot of work for NFL Network. He said that the Chargers are still in talks with Antonio Gates, that Antonio Gates is considering a return to the Los Angeles Chargers, that he would only come back to play for the Chargers. We've talked about this with the Hunter Henry injury. We've talked about it as it relates to Mike Williams. I then looked, and I saw that last year, Antonio Gates played 47% of the Chargers' snaps, okay? So I have a twofold question for you. One, do you think this is ultimately going to happen? And if so, is Gates viable? I mean, I say no because he is in his age 38 season. I don't care that Hunter Henry is not there. When faced with this, I'd much rather some of these younger upside guys that we've talked about before, the Burtons of the world, the Ricky Seals Joneses of the world. Tell me, what do you think? How do you think this story ends with Gates and the Chargers this year?
Yeah, honestly, I see a scenario of him coming back, especially if you're going to consider the only reason Gates would want to come back at this point is potentially get a Super Bowl. And the fact is, if he realizes, which I'm sure he does, as much as if I'm going to sit back here and say I'm picking the Chargers to be my AFC team, there's people out there who believe the same, that they believe this is the most talented roster from top to bottom in the AFC. So, and the one weakness, what did I tell you? Like, go up and down this roster and tell me where their weakness is. The only spot they have is a tight end. You know, some people will argue the linebackers, but I take their front seven as a whole, and their front seven is still a top 10 unit, I would say. So, you know, okay, maybe if you want to nitpick the linebackers, whatever. The point being, this roster is stacked. And if Antonio Gates does come back, there's a good chance that you could have a Super Bowl contending team on your hands here. And it already is without him. But for fantasy purposes, I don't know how much of a step he's lost, where even if he's getting 80% of the snaps, is he going to be reliable every single week? Probably not. Is he going to probably finish close to tight end one if he's getting 80% of the snaps? That's also very likely, honestly. To be honest with you, he could end up being the Frank Gore of tight ends. It's just the fact that, no, you're never thrilled week to week, but, you know, every single week he might get you 50, 60 yards, and every single week you just have a nice floor. In PPR, he's getting you 7 to 8 points. It's never thrilling, hey, I won this week because of him. But at the end of the season, he finishes as a fringe tight end one because he plays 16 games to get you 78 points every week.
Yeah, and there will be that one game that he gets like two touchdowns, you know, four yard touchdowns. Exactly. Absolutely. Listen, Jake, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I agree with you. I do think, listen, when I do my team by team previews, I remember last year, and you can check the tape, Jake, I was incredibly high on the Philadelphia Eagles. I said they would go to the NFC Championship game or beyond. And I said, why? Because when I look at every single position group, I thought they were strong. I thought the talent on the roster was there, right? And I think the same thing about the Chargers this year. You talk about tight end. Yeah, I understand the linebackers, but when you have Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram up front, you know, and you have that back end with Casey Hayward, who literally was PFF's best cornerback in the NFL last year. Don't forget about Trevor Williams, Desmond King, who had good years. Jason Verrett, if he could ever be healthy, I think, listen, they're going to put pressure on the quarterback and they can cover. I think in this passing league that we're in, Jake, the linebacker position on the defense is really where you should invest the least, if you want to know the truth, because you don't need to stop the run as much because nobody's running the damn ball. The only thing I would say, Jake, about the Chargers, the offensive line still scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean a little bit, but I don't think it's ever been an issue, honestly. Even though it's not the best in the league, it didn't hurt him last year.
This is true. This is true. And then the last thing is they do need a kicker who could put the damn ball through the uprights. Well, but that, I know, Jake, you don't want to talk about kickers.
No, they got rid of the your boy.
They got rid of Younghoon Koo. Younghoon Koo, I think it is. But I saw somewhere, right? Did they grab the kid from Tampa that got drafted, the Aguayo kid?
Yeah, but that was competition.
So camp competition. I don't think that's who the incumbent, so to speak. I think their number right now. I think it's Caleb Sturgis.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay,
so like normal.
Aguayo's competition for Sturgis, right. And it'll be Sturgis.
Yeah, I mean, and he's legitimate NFL kicker. We shall see. But literally, I mean, if they don't have collapses in the fourth quarter and if their kicker can put it through the uprights, listen, they would have been a playoff team last year. All right, we'll move on. But we are staying in the AFC West, though, today, Jake, because we are going towards the Kansas City Chiefs. And I want to start off with this. Listen, has the hype train gone too far with Patty Mahomes? I am hearing, Jake, multiple people compare this kid to Brett Favre, like with the gunslinging mentality. The Chiefs certainly, listen, they went out and got Sammy Watkins. We know Tyreek Hill could really stretch the field as well. That's going to create some space for Travis Kelce working over the middle. You know about last year's NFL rushing leader in Kareem Hunt. But the thing is, everyone is in love with Patty Das Mahomes. Jake, are you among them? Do you love Patty Mahomes, or are you pumping the brakes a little bit?
I'm pumping the brakes for where he's going.
Right. You know,
people are drafting him not only inside the top 10, they're drafting him in front of Phillip Rivers. Who, by the way, I'm going to keep saying this. I don't know how many times I have to tell people. In the past decade, the dude hasn't finished as a QB1 one time, and he's finished inside the top 5 three times. Dude, Phillip Rivers is the most disrespected, underrated quarterback in fantasy, just as Tony Romo was before him. And it's just, it's mystique, I don't know, like his persona, perception, whatever it is. Both these guys have always been disrespected when it comes to fantasy. So Phillip Rivers is going behind him. Okay, maybe you don't like the turnovers. Fine, whatever. Matthew Stafford, who's top 8 every single year, is going behind him. Rounds behind him. The problem is I don't have an issue with Patrick Mahomes. I said last year in my draft profile he had the most talent in the class. He has a lot of mechanical flaws, but if you want a landing situation who has a ton of talent and a ton of mechanical flaws, you don't get any better than Andy Reid. So I agreed, and I know his ceiling. That all being said, that's a hell of a lot to put on a fantasy quarterback who I know can run, but to put him in front of people who finish in the top 10 every single year. I don't have a problem if you want to draft Patrick Mahomes. I don't have a problem if you want to take him in, you know, this 8th, 9th round.
Right.
As long as Stafford's off the board, as long as Rivers off the board. He went in front of Andrew Luck and those two quarterbacks in one of my drafts the other year, the other day. Stop taking Patrick Mahomes that high. It's just not necessary.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jake. Listen, first of all, in my main dynasty league, I drafted Patty Mahomes last year. Okay, so he is going for me right now this year. I'm keeping him at an 11th round value, so I'm very happy about that. But I agree with you. I think the kid is going to perform. I think he is going to, you know, maybe not right away, but I think ultimately he will live up to expectations. I think you're right. The fact that he has Andy Reid who can develop him and be a little bit creative with him, I think is definitely a good thing. You mentioned the rushing yards. I could see Patty Mahomes being in that 350 potentially rushing yards area, which is part of the reason why I might be a little bit more down on Kareem Hunt than others, but we'll get into that in a minute. But I agree with you. If we talk about waiting on quarterback, letting it come to you, and he's in that group for me, along with Phillip Rivers, along with Matthew Stafford. I know how much you talk about Carson Wentz at that kind of with this concept as well. Andrew Luck, we talked about. Listen, if you wait on quarterback, one or two of those five guys are definitely going to fall to you. And I know other people like, you know, other, whether it's a Big Ben or Matt Ryan or Jared Goff, or, you know, there's other options. There's different flavors, different strokes for different folks. Some of these guys will fall to you. You do not have to go on up and get them. Jake, who are you going to not have shares of among the Kansas City Chiefs? I mean, we talk about Patty Mahomes. You like him, but just not that high. Is there anybody else on the Chiefs who kind of fit that description, who you may like, but you know that someone else in your league is going to draft them ahead of them, and you just, not because you like him or not, but you just ultimately know you're not going to wind up with many shares of them this year?
Yeah, well, like I said, we talked about this before. There's never anybody that's undraftable for me.
Sure.
And there's somebody always has a price, but I can tell you to your – I actually have an answer for your question because the fact is I'm not going to own any shares of Tyreek Hill. Zero. None. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, look, I understand what people want and I understand what people see in Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill's a terrific player. We also know that Tyreek Hill had a touchdown ratio last year that is unsustainable even for the best wide receivers in the league. Hands like mm-hmm. just that doesn't work that way. He also did so on a target percentage under 20 last year. Mm. Now you bring in Sammy Watkins, which is going to hurt that target percentage, and you look at the fact that, yes, Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill's game actually sync up very well. But you're going to tell me somebody who didn't even have a 20% target share last year, who did what he did on touchdown percentage, who actually scored all of his touchdowns from outside of the 10-yard line. Like
one of them on a Hail Mary in Dallas, remember, at the end of the half?
Zero red zone touchdowns, like actually while he was in the red zone.
Right.
So the fact is you can't tell me all of those things and keep taking Tyreek Hill as a fringe wide receiver one. If you want to push him down where he should be, in my opinion, down to like the 20 range, and because now you have question marks along those, all those wide receivers that are there, no problem. And, you know, I'll probably roll the dice on him the fact that maybe he bucks the trend again for a second year. And, you just want him on your team because he doesn't make sense when it comes to numbers. And that's fine. Some players don't. But I'm not taking that risk as a wide receiver one.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And first of all, Jake, do you like that's the way I framed the question the way I did, right? Because like you said, relatively speaking, everybody's got a price. I think moving forward, Jake, I'm going to ask you questions like who will you have no shares of and who will you have a lot of shares of? Because it considers that idea, that relative value. You know what I mean? But I agree with you. People are taking Tyreek Hill as like, depending on the size of your league, a back end wide receiver one or a top wide receiver two. When faced with that, I would take either one of the Minnesota Vikings wide receivers. We talk about guys like, and he's going in the same place as guys like Mike Evans, as the same place as guys like T.Y. Hilton. I will run and grab Larry Fitzgerald and his stability over Tyreek Hill and his variance. You know, I would even maybe consider a guy like AR-15 in Chicago ahead of a Tyreek Hill. You mentioned all the reasons why, okay? They bring in Sammy Watkins, which will eat into it a little bit. He still has to develop chemistry with a new quarterback, and a lot of the stats of Tyreek Hill show that he is primed for regression and not really being able to be sustainable. You talk about this is not a guy that's like a target in the red zone. This is a guy who's getting 45-yard passes or taking quick screens, making some moves, and going to the house a la a special teams performer. But that is the other question for you, Jake. You know, there are some formats, right, where let's say you have Tyreek Hill. You know, there are some formats where if he returns a punt for a touchdown, where that gets credited to the Kansas City Chiefs defense, there are some formats where that player gets credit for a return touchdown. Does that matter to you at all if you expect maybe Tyreek Hill to get two or three special teams touchdowns this year?
No, because it's just still factored into his touchdowns, and to try and predict that is just you generally don't try and predict touchdowns to begin with, let alone mm-hmm. starting to try to predict special teams touchdowns.
All right, fair enough. You know, I love it when it does help me win a week, you know, but you're right. You can't necessarily rely on that. This isn't Devin Hester, for God's sake. You know, Jake, one of the guys I'm not going to have shares of this year, and I don't know if you agree because I do think you have him a little bit higher than I do, is running back Kareem Hunt. And Jake, here's my rationale for it. I want to see what you think. One is, listen, the man led the NFL in rushing yards as a rookie. You talk about like with some of these guys, like an Alvin Kamara or something, if you're drafting them there, you're like buying all the risk, you know, and buying like what they did last year and expecting the repeat. And I think that's the situation with Kareem Hunt. If I'm looking, you know, to get Kareem Hunt, you're going to need to make him your first round draft pick, right? Or at the very back of the turn or something like that. And at that level, I'm looking for reasons why this guy could crap out on me, you know, and when I stack up the reasons that he could crap out on me against a guy like, oh, I don't know, Melvin Gordon, let's say, or Saquon Barkley, let's say, or other guys in that range, I think Hunt loses out. First of all, you know, I don't think he leads the league in rushing again. You know, there will be some kind of regression there. You talk about the other weapons that are now here, Sammy Watkins most notably. You talk about a new quarterback in Patty Mahomes, and it looks like they're going to want to go down the field. And that quarterback, Patty Mahomes, has some rushing potential as well. I don't think Spencer Ware, who is back, does a big, you know, eats a significant chunk in. But even if Spencer Ware winds up with 250 yards rushing the entire season, that's 250 yards that Kareem Hunt does not have. Are you with me, Jake, or you think I'm crazy? I will not have any shares of Kareem Hunt this year.
No, I honestly think everybody who doesn't want Kareem Hunt is crazy. And please,
oh, really?
let him fall to my team.
Like, tell me why.
Because I don't see any reason for him to have a fall off. Look at what he did last year with Andy Reid screwing around with him. He didn't start the season as the starter. He got yanked as the starter in the middle of the season when Andy Reid lost his mind. So you still have all that. And the fact that he still, as you said, led the league in rushing. And Patrick Mahomes can open up this offense for him. You have another weapon in the passing game. This is going back to the pie situation we talked about with Odell Beckham and the rest on the Giants and everything like that. Is this offense that just gets softens up the defense for him. And honestly, if you talk about Patrick Mahomes and you're worried about him passing more, well, what if Kareem Hunt offsets his rushing with some more receptions, because he's a very good pass-catching running back. So I'm happy people are looking for reasons not to like Kareem Hunt, and I don't get it. Honestly, I'm not saying like you specifically. I just don't get why. Because you're not the only person. It just feels like there's this consensus out there that are trying to find reasons not to like the guy who was the number four running back despite inconsistent uses until we got to the middle of the season. So I just, to me, I'm like, no problem. I'll take him at the second half of the first round every single time.
Yeah, the one thing, I still, when faced with the decision, I'm going to take Melvin Gordon over him. I'm going to take Saquon Barkley over him, that sort of thing. But one thing you said that does make sense to me, especially when you have these speedsters on the outside in both Watkins and Hill, that means, you know, safeties are going to have to think twice, you know, about stacking the box against the Kansas City Chiefs, because, you know, Hill and Watkins are going to be able to blow by you, and you know Patty, that's Mahomes, is not going to be adverse to slinging it downfield over the top. So I think that, you know, could give safeties cause for pause to come on down into the box and could help him a little bit. I just, I do think that there might be some slight regression. I think he'll be good, but I will choose, you know, Saquon Barkley or Melvin Gordon, Zeke Elliott, those kind of guys in the middle of the first round ahead of Hunt. And I've seen him ranked, you know, I've seen Kareem Hunt ranked as running back 5, 6, 7 in that range. He's just slightly lower than that for me. So ultimately, I will not personally have shares of him. We are off and running, though. Roto Experts in the morning, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, the spitting statistician, Dane Martinez. When we come back, we look at the over-under win total for the Chiefs. We talk about their elite tight end, and then we move on. Jake, I don't know if you are playing anymore, but I'm catching you on Roto Clio, so we may have to look at that a little bit when we come back. Roto Experts in the Morning, award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back. Roto Experts in the Morning. Jake Seeley, Dane Martinez here. We put the fun in functional sports radio. It is a real love. Little Mary J. Blige and Biggie. Yo, Jake, I was at a friend's house for the fireworks yesterday here in New York. I was on a rooftop in Manhattan. It was very nice. But, you know, I think about this Brooklyn with Biggie. And part of it, like, you could see the Macy's fireworks. But the best part is as you looked across and you saw, like, all of Queens and all of Brooklyn without the big buildings. And you saw, like, in every neighborhood, you know, you saw fireworks popping off. It was really nice. Do you like, is there a big spot there, maybe on the water or something, that you guys watched fireworks yesterday?
No, you can pretty much see them from everywhere because they do them at the beach and they do them at Mount Trashmore, right, which is this little park area. So you can see them throughout most of the city. So you know, you can go there, or you could just kind of stay home and go walk out the door and watch.
Yeah, I guess there's less obstructed view than there is in New York City, right?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. One thing I got to say, and I don't know how I can work this, but I'm on a friend's roof. We're watching the fireworks. It's nice, you know, barbecue, all that good stuff. Jake, there were like regular planes flying into LaGuardia and Kennedy during that. I'm almost thinking about planning a vacation specifically so that I can return home and land at LaGuardia at like 10 o'clock at night on Independence Day. That must be amazing, being in a plane flying into the city and seeing the fireworks go around. What do you think?
Well, unless you're on the wrong side of the plane and can't see, because
I guess, but hopefully,
also trying to see through that little tiny window.
It's true, but hopefully, just, you know, the pilot will circle.
Just do
for
it
a
like
while,
a charter your own plane.
Yeah, I'll hop right on that, Jake. I'll go to charter my helicopter or something. No problem. It is real, real easy to make that pop off. Hey, Jake, we were talking about the Kansas City Chiefs. And obviously, we all know about Travis Kelce. We all agree that Travis Kelce is a top three tight end. Here's what I want to ask you, because we talk about how we wait on quarterback. You know, we just talked about how in this division, you know, Phillip Rivers, Patty Mahomes, they may be people that if they come to you, you know, lower in the draft, you'd be happy to have. What about applying this rule of thumb to the tight end position this year, Jake? You know, like, so are you going to spend the draft capital that it takes to get a guy like Travis Kelce? Or are you going to be happy with these kind of middle, you know, tight ends 8 through 14 where you might like a guy better than I do? You may like Ricky Seals-Jones. I may like Trey Burton, you know, but knowing that there's going to be an opportunity to get one of three kind of tight ends later in the draft, are you also not going to have shares of Kelce?
No, I don't have shares of any of them. I'm never going to draft a tight end in the second round, ever. Right. It's just insane to me, and because I know everybody's like, well, if you get Gronkowski for 16 games, you have such a leg up in all the rest of the tight ends. I said, yeah, but you immediately lose it on what you give up in running back or wide receiver. You're giving up one of the two. And the fact is, you can make it work again, and it can lead to a league title, and you can win with it. It just adds more risk, and now you need something to break right for you. It's just more risky, and I'm not going to do that with my draft. And I'm especially, if you are going to do it, please, God, do not draft your quarterback in the first six rounds as well. That's insane to me, honestly.
Well, that's like our guy Emory Hunt.
Oh, yeah, of course. So the fact is, no, I'm not ever going to do it, and that's why. But I'm happy because somebody like Kyle Rudolph is there in the seventh and eighth round every single time, which is just so disrespectful to me for Kyle Rudolph. And talk about Kyle Rudolph also going behind somebody like Trey Burton. It's just like I just got my first share of Trey Burton yesterday, and it's not because I'm like super excited about him and I see the potential, but he finally fell to the ninth round. And I'm like at that point, like, okay, now I will jump in on Trey Burton because Kyle Rudolph was off the board. Greg Olsen was off the board. Jimmy Graham, Delanie Walker, we're off the board. Those guys should be off the board before Trey Burton, and yet people keep taking Trey Burton like the top six tight ends, and that's just insane to me. But all that being said, I'll happily take Trey Burton, Kyle Rudolph, Delanie Walker, especially in PPR, even Jimmy Graham. I have a few shares of him if it's the seventh, eighth, ninth round, and I know I'll get at least one of those is falling into that range.
Yep, absolutely. So Jimmy Graham is to tight end, and Kyle Rudolph is to tight end, sort of what like Carson Wentz is and Matthew Stafford is to quarterback. You know what I mean? If you're going to be able to wait and let the draft come to you, Jake Seeley and I are both telling you guys this year, even more than most, you got to go wide receivers, you got to go running backs early on. Jake, when I go over to mybookie.ag, and you guys should go on over to mybookie.ag and enter the promo code FNTSY because you will get a 50% deposit bonus with a little bit of a rollover requirement. But listen, you ain't got to worry about DFS, okay? You could just put your money wherever you'd like. There's the prop builder tool, okay? You could set the lines how you want. Check it on out at mybookie.ag. Enter the promo code FNTSY and get a 50% deposit bonus. Jake, when I go on over to mybookie.ag, the Chiefs season win total stands at 8.5. And I got to be honest with you, Jake. I want to get your take. I'm passing on this. I'm not betting on this. I could see them being right around there. I actually think, don't get me wrong, I love Patty Mahomes and all. We've talked about this. But I can see them taking a small step back in the short term, you know, as they kind of reorganize and kind of build under Patty Mahomes for the long-term future. But the only thing that would cause me pause and maybe take the under on this is, and I know you're not as huge of a fan of this, I look at their schedule, Jake. It's not easy. Remember, they, four of their first six games are on the road at the Chargers, at the Steelers, at Mile High for the Broncos, and at New England to take on the Patriots. That is not easy, in my opinion. The other thing I think is a challenge is this. The AFC West this year, their NFC counterpart they play is the NFC West. So they play those four teams, and they draw the short straw, in my opinion. If you're going to play the other division, two of those games are at home. Two of them are on the road. They get Seattle and the Rams on the road. I think they got the bad side of that. They got a tough home, a tough road schedule. That gives me a little bit of issue, especially early on with Patty Mahomes. I don't know. What are you doing with this season win total at 8.5, Jake?
I told you before, I'm not messing with most of the teams in this division. It's just right. Because it's pretty wide open of anything could go any which way for this. Like I said, this entire division worries me, except for the Chargers.
We like the under on the Raiders, though, right?
Yeah, I do like the under on the Raiders because they have the biggest question marks of all these teams. But to be honest with you, it wouldn't surprise me if the Raiders finished second. I just think it has the least opportunity to do so.
Yeah, fair enough. I will say this, Jake. I checked again, you know, when I was looking on some Joey Chestnut odds, and the Raiders season win total has gone up, Jake. It's gone up from 8.5 to 9, which means now for you to lose that bet, they would have to win double digits. I really like that one. I'm going to throw some shekels on that one. Jake, as I was going on to my bookie, you know, I've also been telling you about my World Cup bets, and I don't want to get too much into it because, you know, we got a little bit of a break now before the World Cup gets going with its quarterfinals. Jake, as you know.
What, one day? Isn't it tomorrow?
Well, yesterday and today. Two days. But fair enough. So we are down to 8, though, Jake. As you know, I have been riding with Belgium and Croatia the whole time. Belgium and Croatia are 2 of the 8 teams that still do remain, although they both had, you know, challenges getting to this line. So here's the question I have for you, though, Jake. I got Belgium originally at 10-1 to win it all. I got Croatia originally at 20-1 to win it all. When I go on over to mybookie.ag, they are now both sitting at plus 600. Okay? So 6-1. My question for you is, do I keep it aggressive and have some fun with this, or do I try to sell my tickets at a kind of prop swap kind of thing right now? I got Croatia at 20-1. They're down to 6-1. Do I just cash out right now, or do I continue to sweat it out for the next week or so? What do you think?
I don't know why you're asking me.
Because you're the all-in kid. I thought you would be very aggressive.
I don't know nothing about soccer.
You don't have to know about soccer, Jake. It's an interesting proposition, though. Do I hedge or do I just go for it? I thought the all-in kid would be like, nah, let it ride.
I don't know who's of what's left. I don't know. So I guess England's the favorite on that side.
Probably.
So who's the other one? It was Croatia. You said Belgium?
Oh, Belgium. Yeah, I have Belgium who faces Brazil in the next round.
So, okay, if it was me, then I would sell Belgium and hold on to Croatia.
Okay, and yeah, because Croatia I have originally at 20-1, so that would be the nice little payoff
and
right there.
And they're facing Russia.
And they're facing Russia, but yes. And then they would have England, I guess, as the favorite to get to the final.
Yeah, Sweden.
Right, so they got a decent...
Belgium could get beat right now because
right
they're
now.
Facing Brazil. And then
right,
they have
Belgium
to face the winner
tomorrow.
Of Uruguay-France.
Which is a much tougher road to hoe.
Oh, I forgot. Yes. I forgot because it's the World Cup. It's not Uruguay anymore. It's Uruguay.
Uruguay. There you go. That's right. So, right. The Belgium definitely has a tougher road. But I'm sitting with Croatia at 20-1, Jake. And like you said, they have a decent path to the final. So we shall see. But
as
I'm
long as the
to,
Russian
you know,
judge doesn't get involved.
I know. All the stray dogs and Putin and the collusion and all that good stuff. But you told me not to worry about that. You told me that was fake. You told me that was fake news, Jake.
It is.
All right. Fair enough. Go ahead. You could take your sip of whatever it is. It's all good. Hey, Jake, I want to ask you about this. Where do I want to go? There's so many places I might want to go. I wanted to talk about Roto Clio, which I fear, unfortunately, is falling off a little bit. So I wanted to ask you about how we continue to. I know. So let's talk about this, Jake. How do we continue to administer Roto Clio? You know, because we got to come to an agreement on this, right? Because I wasn't here on Monday, and I want to ask you. I know you're not in the spreadsheet right now. I want to ask you because I wasn't there on Monday, but I did put picks in, and it looks like you didn't, right? Because you were talking maybe with Scott, maybe you didn't cover it. I put picks in, and I got a win. I didn't get it on the hitter side, but I did get a win on the pitcher side. And then on the 3rd, which was Tuesday when I was back, we were talking about all sorts of other stuff. I think we had Colin Drew on with us or something, and we didn't really get to it. I put a pick in. You didn't, and I got a win there too with Zach Eflin. So I'm kind of catching up to you, Jake. But the question is, you know, I don't know. Like, you just didn't put anything in. You didn't, you know, you got to be in it to win it. So while I am closing the gap on you, I feel a little bit bad. It feels like you're letting it fall through the cracks a little bit. So the question is, do we Do we set an end date for our game? Do we start to come up with another game? Or are you like, that's all right, I just wanted to make it more interesting and I'm still going to dominate you, Speeds? How do you want to play this, Jake?
No, well, the fact is, neither of those count anyway. We didn't talk about it on the show because we didn't make the picks on the show.
Wait a second. There have been times where you have not been on the show. You have entered picks into the spreadsheet directly.
But you talked about it on the show.
No, but Jake, there's been days where you weren't on the show. There's been days
but
where you
But you talked
on.
About it. Again, you talked about it on the show. You made picks on the show. So I made picks not to get left out. Neither day did we talk about it on the show and make picks.
Well, this is what I'm saying. We need to clarify what the rules are, and I think this is the perfect opportunity to do so. So you are of the point of view that my July 2nd and my July 3rd picks are irrelevant. Are
shady.
Not, should not be
They're
counted.
Downright shady because They're you didn't even shady. Say you didn't even say anything. You didn't even say and shoot me a text, which you have my number, and say, hey, okay. I'm putting picks in. I see you didn't. You didn't even say anything. You just put your picks in. So I think
I did,
you
because I didn't know.
You're
I didn't know when I was
going to
talk to you.
Trying to gain ground, and I'm still winning. So the fact
you
is
you are still winning. You have a 5-point lead right now. The beauty,
look,
though, of a Google Doc, Jake, is that you can click in all changes
ranks.
Saved on the drive, and you can see when I put those in and know that I was above board. It's not like I'm cheating or anything.
No, it's not the fact of when you put them in. It's the fact that you put them in after we didn't talk about it on the show and didn't say anything about it. So there you go.
All right. So let's – moving forward, Jake. Moving forward.
The game's
forward.
Over. I already won.
The game's over. You want to end Roto Clio.
Yeah, because you even got 2 free days of playing and
– And I closed the gap. I closed the gap from like a 10-point lead to a 5-point lead.
Yeah, even with the shady picks, you still do.
All right. So what we're saying
and now
is you
I'm in the sheet.
The
I'm in the sheet now
I see
too.
You. I
wait,
see.
Wait, I'm in the and that you had 2 picks on the second also. So
that is true. I did. I did because I didn't know which way I wanted to go because I was going to talk
to
you.
Yeah. So you're just.
I was like because I didn't know if I wanted to be chalky or not. Right. But both of those guys won, so it didn't matter which way. If I went Kluber or Wood, they both got W's.
Either way, so you also have 2 picks in there. So at the end of June, which was just fine, we could have ended it at June. I won.
Oh, okay, that's the line you want to say.
If you want to throw in your extra 6 points, you still lose. So either way, it's fine.
All right, so how are we moving on, Jake? Because I do like playing games. You know, I do think we should have a day-by-day game. I do think we should give a chance for our listeners, guys like J-Rod, guys like Ron C., and others who have been playing along with us. I do think we should come up with some kind of new game. Maybe what we do, Jake, is we think about it today. We go back and forth a little bit, you know, and I would love to come up with a new game starting next week for us to officially maybe turn the page on Roto Clio and baseball, right? And think about a new game that we could start to play for football. But the only problem is, you know, the events don't happen yet, so we can't like win or lose. And I know that, you know, we're not going to be making 100 gentlemen's bets kind of thing. So we have to figure out a new game. But Jake, I know you love the games. And here's the other thing I know. Starting next week, we got the DKMS Trivia Challenge as well. So maybe we could work some of that in as well. You know, maybe trivia questions or other kind of games. You play games all the time, though, Jake. How do you want to play this? What do you think we could do?
I mean, you can bring this back for July if you want until the end of the month.
Now it's okay. You got it.
I mean, I'm just saying if you want to play something.
I want to play something, but I agree that we need to kind of sort of move to a more football focus. So I understand and acknowledge.
But there's nothing we can play in July.
Exactly. That's the thing. Maybe we do our own kind of trivia kind of contest. We take some of these DKMS questions. I also think we're going to get some more callers as we go into football. And remember, the number to call is 844-843-6879. Our guy Mike Leone thinks that Bryce Harper is going to go yard today. So with the time that
so
we have
I.
left. You do? Interesting.
Yeah.
That's okay. So listen, whether that's a
Pablo Lopez at home. So yeah.
Exactly. I was gonna go with a little bit of maybe Evan Gattis today to go yard.
We could do that. We could just like I said, if you want to do July, we'll do what home runs and wins for the rest of the month.
We could do just home runs and wins. I'm okay with that. If you're in the sheet right now, Jake, I see that you are. Put me down for Gattis. But the thing is, I gotta go so chalky. You know,
Boom.
I want to go Verlander today, but I don't know how much grief you're going to give me.
No, it should just be anybody but Verlander.
All right, fine. Give me Matt Boyd.
Matt Boyd?
Yeah, give me Matt Boyd today. Give me Boyd and Gattis.
Hold on, I forgot who I was taking now at pitcher. There was one. I had one. It wasn't Max Fried. Is it Fried or is it Freed?
I think it's Freed, but you're the pronunciation expert, Jake, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, so
I thought it was Freed.
Baseball reference. Pull it up. That's what we have here for. Let's find out. We get the official. It is Freed.
It is Freed.
So there
all
you
right,
go.
Cool.
And
so you're going Fried and Bryce?
No, I'm not. I said no, but he's not in Milwaukee. That's my problem. So, and then I don't know if Johnny Cueto is going to last long enough. Oh, it was Hellickson. I was going to go with Hellboy against Pablo Lopez.
Fair enough. I'm going to go Matty Boyd. I'll go Evan Gattis going Yard. It was between Boyd and, oddly enough, I was even considering Shelby Miller, even given his crazy inflated ERA in his first couple of starts. But I'm going Matty Boyd, and I'll go with Evan Gattis to go Yard. Thanks for capturing that for us today, Jake. With a couple minutes that we have left, and as you know, we get a little bit more time, Jake, because Carton and Friends is on break this week. I thought it was hysterical. You know how I listened to some of the commercials, you know, for some of the other things in the network, and I loved you and the fantasy executive going after Chris Ventura, our guy, the analyst, and how much he loves his boy, Jimmy Garoppolo. You guys were talking about, like, you know, the Italian national anthem playing before 49ers games. You know Ventura is all over it. And so I went into the exclusive Edge premium package, you know, and I see that our boy, the analyst, Chris Ventura, he has a piece on key new players, new faces in new places. You know, and he talks about guys like Kirk Cousins. He mentions Jerick McKinnon. He mentions Sammy Watkins. And Sammy Watkins is someone who we talked about today, how we think he could be the off-the-radar kind of guy that, you know, the same thing as when we said Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones. You take the guy that's going later. I would say with Tariq Hill and Sammy Watkins, we both think Tariq Hill is being overdrafted. So maybe the inverse is true, that Sammy Watkins could represent a value. So we agree with the analyst Chris Ventura there. Talk to me real quick in the couple minutes we have left about these two other guys. Jerick McKinnon. I think Jerick McKinnon, personally, Jake, is a guy who, is very similar to Pat Mahomes. Like, I like the skill. I like the opportunity. I like the buzz that Shanahan wants to use him in the quote-unquote Devontae Freeman role, right? But I think he's I think the hype train is going a little bit too far. I've seen him as high as, like, running back in PPR settings, running backs like 11, 12, 13, 14. I think he's a solid RB2, but I don't know if I'm spending up on him that much. What do you think about McKinnon, Jake?
Yeah, that's my problem with this. Again, is who's he going in front of and where is he going? And the fact is, McKinnon, for what everybody assumes about him, Mike Clay put this out in his article. I found the same stats when I was researching him. He ranked very poorly in yards per carry and yards after contact. He was 36th and 37th in those. So everybody thinks he's super elusive. Well, Pro Football Focus also rated him well below average in elusive on their rating for that, with how much weight you want to put into that. The fact is McKinnon is not as, like, slippery as people think he is, and it's not that he can't succeed. He definitely can. He could definitely succeed in an offense that the coach, being Shanahan, who has success with his running backs, handpicked him to come there and signed him to the contract. He
Big
will
money.
Succeed. He'll be fine. But he's going to be in that 14 to 18 touch range. He's not going to be the RB1 with 20 plus touches every single week. And that's the issue. You want to take him in the third round? No problem. I even have, like, a share or two of him because he actually fell that far where he deserves to be. The problem is the people pulling him into the second round. The problem is the people drafting him as, like, the 10th, 11th running back off the board.
Yeah, and here's my question. I see him similar to how a lot of the things we've talked about with, like, Chris Thompson, Alvin Kamara, how we don't want him to take the wear and tear of
The best example is Lamar Miller.
Right. But they don't have another guy in San Francisco. I mean, do you believe that
Breida
or Joe Williams, these guys, you think are going to spell McKinnon?
Yeah,
and then,
absolutely.
But if that's the case, isn't that more reason that he shouldn't be going as high as he is?
Yeah, that's part of it too. Like, that's the thing. I was saying he's going to stay for the majority of games in that 14 to 18 range, and Matt Breida is going to be on the field, and maybe even Joe Williams coming back from injury. Because remember last year, he banged the table for Joe Williams in the draft, and all, like this. So the fact is, somebody's still going to mix in.
Yeah, a lot of reasons. Listen, the narrative is that these San Francisco 49ers are just all of a sudden ascending in this division. And I would pump the brakes on it just a little bit when it comes to guys like McKinnon, when it comes to guys like Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah, they may succeed, but I don't know if they are worth the draft capital that you will have to put into them in order to get them on your roster. Happy 4th of July. Once again, let me be the last to tell you that. Jake, have a great rest of the day. Tomorrow, it looks like we're going to be throwing bouquets to the Chargers' way. But have a great day. Dane Martinez and the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Coming up.